Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hey, upbeat listeners. This is Tom Hayes in Boston, Massachusetts. Speaking all the way to Olympia, Washington today with Alf Pegstad.
Just blows your mind.
They're always up. Yeah, now, let me get that.
Sometimes
get rid of that.
You don't know what to do. But you gotta go back.
Go back.
To the sugar shack. Has anybody seen my lady?
Right, it's a sugar shack day today, but we're gonna have a little fun here. Let me just introduce myself, Tom Hayes, Upbeat Radio, and I found Alf through a mutual friend, Rebecca Tripp, who is a trip into herself. Just she wrote a book called the story of the mystical flight attendant, and she told me about the podcast Being a Better Man and Alf, and we contacted over this week. We were going to do Skype on his side, but that didn't work out, so we're going to try it on our side. So, Alf, first of all, thank you for coming on my show and for being a force on the airway. Evidently, it's reaching people and making a difference. And let's, first of all, check the sound quality. How's this? Better than what we had with Skype? Alf, are you there? Huh. I see you. Let me click again. Alf.
Yes, you can are. You hear me?
Oh, I got you now. How's the sound quality?
You sound pretty good. And
we don't have the vacuum sound that we had on Skype, right?
Nope. Yet. And just thank you for accommodating me. In lieu of this technical difficulty, I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah. So, again, you're making an impact. People are finding you. Why don't you tell us the story of how you got the idea for the podcast and how all that happened?
Well, when I didn't even know what a podcast was 2 years ago, and I was I'm a long-haul trucker is one of my vocations, and I was driving around and my wife was going with me and she's like, hey, let's listen to podcast. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. So she hooked it up in my truck and we listened to some podcast. And immediately I'm like, wow, this is a real way to impact people to convey a message. And I happen to have a message because for the last, I'm 54 years old now, but my whole life I've kind of really been a student of not just humanity, but men in particular, because I'm a man and I'm seeing things in my brethren across the world that cause concern. There's a lot of guys growing up with no dads or bad dads, or they're just drifting into adulthood without any guidance or direction. And I'm like, I'm going to talk about being a man, not just being a man, but being a better man today than we were yesterday, because that's kind of a philosophy I adopted maybe 10 years ago. If I can just be a little bit better today than I was yesterday and keep doing that until I die, then I'll get close to my potential as a man. So that's what I started doing.
Great. Well, you resonate, just what you said resonates totally with me, because I'm seeing the same thing. Not only a degeneration of what men used to be, I'm an activist myself. I'm speaking out. In fact, I saw a great thing from that it was encouraging, excuse me, this week from Starbucks. They said they acknowledged the problems that America's having, and it certainly is being exemplified or manifested in the choices, we have for a presidential election. And they said,
right.
Well, what can we do as Americans? And they said, you can either stand by or you can stand up. And so they've decided to feature people who have decided to stand up. And, you know, I keep coming under attack from people saying, you know, why don't you just be quiet? Why don't you just accept this is the way it is? And I go back and say, well, you know, Gandhi didn't shut up, and certainly Martin Luther King didn't shut up, and Mandela didn't shut up, nor did Socrates shut up, nor did Jesus shut up. There's all throughout history, there's a few people who spoke up and stood out, not only stood up, but stood out. So I commend
right.
you on what you're doing. You're standing out.
Well, thank you. And I think it's resonating with people. I've had people as young as 16 years old write to me as a listener, as old as in their 50s. And I think it's resonating because people don't hear this particular message very often, because I just talk about the character of men. Like, when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, when nobody else is watching you, what kind of man are you? And people don't talk about that stuff that often. If you look on my list of episode titles, it's like I talk about, you know, hospitality. I mean, no, who talks about that? Integrity, things like that. I mean, all the little components that make up a man and make him a better man.
Yeah, that's you know, I'm trying to shut up here, so, because I was going to be your guest, but I was going to sound off like crazy. But I guess we're co-guests right now, and I hope this is just the beginning of what we both can share with each other. So I'm going to let you just keep on, because, you know, I feel so strongly about this, and sometimes I overreact because I have deep feelings for this. And I see the problems. I mean, I'm 69, and I tell people, you know, I'm pretty enraged by what's going on. And people say, what's your problem? I said, well, let me tell you my problem. I said, I grew up as a product of the greatest generation, you know, label that was given. And I forget the newscaster who gave that label and wrote the books and did the documentaries. But I said, I grew up with a generation, male and female, who went through a depression, went through all kinds of adversity, were probably born to first-generation immigrants, most of them, and or certainly second. And they went through a depression. They defeated the Japanese and the Germans, and they came back, and they had one focus: to get married and produce something better for their kids. And the term was they were going to sacrifice for their children. And
right.
the problem I have is I've lived long enough to see the worst generation America has ever produced. And I can back that up with all kinds of anecdotes and just true facts.
And statistics.
Yeah, it's bad. It's very bad. And so, you know, I attacked what I thought are the causes of that, and I backed off a little bit because, you know, when you attack, you're going to get resistance and attack back, and the arguments just become arguments, and everybody walks away. But I've shifted that now, and I tell people my message now is I have a deep concern, as you just expressed, for the children of our society. I think they're getting a raw deal, and they've been getting a raw deal for two or three generations, and that's why we have the mess we have today. And you're right. We have seen a predominance of media attention, just a raising a level of consciousness. It has been all mostly almost 100% female-oriented. you know, the betterment of women, the advancement of women, the empowerment of women. And as a result, I was shocked about 20 years ago. I was shocked because it was so contra the conventional wisdom. Somebody actually wrote a book on the importance of a father's love. And it was, again, such an anomaly. And basically the finding was, it was done by sociologists and scientists, et cetera, said there is nothing will replace a father's love. And you don't hear that in the conventional wisdom, because we have a society that is now 50% single mothers, all right? And there's no talk about what a man does, or his love, or his, or a father's responsibilities, etc. You flip on the television, men are simply portrayed as buffoons, whether it's in commercials or it's a sitcom or whatever.
I talk about that. I can name 5 sitcoms right now where the father is just a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
And the mother is the smart one who controls everything, and, you know, nothing against women at all, but man, what happened to, you know, Father Knows Best and those kind of shows, Leave It to Beaver, where the dad was, a great guy. He was the rock of the family. I don't want to take anything away from moms or women, but we gotta keep men and fathers in the importance that they belong in.
Yeah, and that's not happening. And as a result, I'm not proud of what we call men today. I think that I don't think the term even applies. I just spoke to one of my buddies and told him about this podcast, and he called me a couple of weeks ago and said, he says, I just thought of a new T-shirt. It says, Real Man Inside. Now, if this was the 1960s, 70s, people would look at you like, what the heck are you talking about? But today, just a simple statement like that, or a T-shirt like that, is saying, making a very strong statement. It's contrasting that the fact that there are a few real men left inside there.
Yeah, and what I've learned since starting this podcast, as I'm talking to more men of a younger generation and finding out what they're up against in the world, it's like they feel like they're walking on eggshells a lot of times, because if they do certain things that 20 years ago would have been just associated with being a man, now they're criticized or ridiculed, or suddenly they're a feminist, or they're, I mean, not a feminist, but a
anti-feminist. Yeah.
Yes.
Everything is politically incorrect.
So guys don't know whether to open the door for a girl or not, or this or that. They're worried about being in trouble. And I say, just do what you think is right. And if somebody doesn't like it, that's their problem, not yours. But anyway.
Well, again, this is the consciousness, the current consciousness. You can't talk anymore. You can't say anything because somebody's going to take offense. And they're right. I mean, it's a very difficult thing for guys, because the media is totally on the other side. And to back it up, you know, it's like the media is launching is the artillery. They're just bombing away every single day on masculinity and males, et cetera. And not only from the feminists, but, you know, my arguments have congealed or gelled in the past few months. And I realized one day, I just said to myself, my problem is I'm white, I'm male, and I'm straight. And today in this society, that's an easy target for everyone to hate. Yet if I was not of one of those things, then I would be more accepted, you see, because that is, and, you know, even my female friends will go wake up to when I say that and say, yeah, you're right. You know, the white male, straight male is on the bottom of the totem pole and is the target for everybody. And they go, hey, that's right. You know, you guys are really getting the wrong deal here. And so, again, trying to you know, ward off the attacks and not to, because it's a losing battle, because we're wrong as soon as we open our mouths. And I understand what those guys are going through. So I proposed what I think is the real problem. I'm concerned for today's kids. They're getting a raw deal. Not just the boys, but the girls, especially the girls, are really getting the raw deal.
Well, yeah, the girls too, because for every young man that grows up without a father, there's a young girl that's growing up without a father, and a father is her first idea of what a man is a little girl's dad, and she imprints on that. If she has no dad, you know, who's she gonna judge that against? Who's she gonna pick in the future or whatever? It's just as bad for
her. She has no standard. You're right. She has no standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that's, again, we're going to talk 50% of the households are single mothers. What's that about? You know, and
man,
nobody,
I don't know.
Nobody's addressing this. Nobody's addressing this. They just, you know, we, you know, even, I just say, you know, where even are the politicians? Do we hear from the politicians any platform where they're talking about families, kids, education, medicine, you know, medical health of the nation? No. What are they arguing about? You know, they're pointing everything at something outside. They're pointing at immigrants. You know, they're pointing at ISIS. They want to blame all of the internal. You know, civilizations fall apart from the inside, and we're doing a really good job of that.
We are doing an excellent job. It's true.
You see, you know, people, again, they don't want me to talk up. You know, I call it, this is the kind of the shrug-off attitude. Shrug it off. Just, you can't change it, so shut up and move
yeah.
on. And I can't. I'm not one of those people to shut up. But, you know, again, it's, you know, arguing this and discussing this with people has honed my arguments. And at one time I worked for an international medical company, and we made and sold X-ray film. So, and occasionally there would be a batch that would come from the factory that was defective. And I would go into a radiologist's office, and he'd have a film up, and he would rip one side of me to the other, and he would point to a white spot on the film and say, "You see that? I read that as a cancer." And I was ready to walk in to tell the patient that he had cancer. And instead, my gut told me to take another film. And when I took the other film, it was gone. So I realized the problem is with your film. There's a break in the emulsion.
Mm.
And so when I went back to the factory and told them they had a problem, they didn't like it. But they were smart enough to listen, because they knew they wouldn't survive with the bad product. Well, I'm sorry,
right.
But my contention, this is the worst product. This culture that we have just, this generation, this culture that exists today, is the worst product that America has ever produced. So something is wrong within the production process. Something has been introduced to the mix that has created this mess. And if
or
you just
taken
want
away
to ignore
from
it,
the mix. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
there was all of the ingredients. That's right. All the ingredients. But see, I see it as an introduction of a concept of a consciousness that shifted everything to the empowerment of women at the expense of men. And to perpetuate that over and over and over again, so that the males feel like these young guys today. They don't know their place. They're afraid to talk up. They don't have any courage. They don't have the stamina. Because and it's
well, they have no concept of what their role is. No concept at
well,
all.
Well, exactly. See, they, unlike me and probably you, because you know we're a generation apart. But you still saw. I imagine you still saw a real man. You still saw bits of the after effects of the Greatest Generation. You see,
totally.
They don't have that. They think what exists today is normal. They don't have a standard.
Right.
And you see, and the rest of them want us to shut up and not talk about it because. Go ahead.
Oh, that's just part of my mission is speaking into that listening of these guys that are out there. And like you said, I had my dad. He was my mentor, and now he's 81. He's really my best friend. And but he's just an awesome, solid rock of a man. And I don't know where I would have been without him. And my own children. I mean, I got divorced when they were fairly young. And then I went on to become a single parent myself. So I fought for and won custody of my kids. And they grew up with me, at least. And the whole component of... so look, there are some single moms that do a great job, and they all do the best they can. But there's some things that a mother can't provide that a father provides.
Exactly. But that's been discounted. It doesn't count for anything anymore. And, you know, and it's been whoever launched that. You see, what I tell people, I say, you know something, it only took a couple of voices. I mean, I'm being polite right now because I could use a pejorative. A couple of voices, a couple of loudmouths who started the movement and who emphasized the desertion of the family. See, that it was the family was no longer paramount. It was career, you see. And here we are, how many generations later? And I tell people, women, you got taken for a ride. You got sold a bill of goods, you see, because you didn't get a career. What you got was a cubicle.
Yeah.
And they tricked you.
They
and
gave
as a result,
up what
everybody's suffering.
Yeah, they gave up the best of what it is to be a woman for the worst of what it is to be a man.
Yeah. I like that. That's beautifully put. And as a result, everybody's suffering. But you see,
yeah,
the powers that be, whether it be the corporations, the female voice, whatever, they are so this doctrine is so ingrained, this propaganda is so ingrained that they've created the gerbil wheel. All right, it's the rat race, and everybody's on the gerbil wheel, and they think that this is the only way, and they can't. And I say to people react, "Well, this is the way it has to be. Two people have to work." And my retort to that is, and it took me a while to say it, what was wrong with the way it was? You tell me what
right.
was wrong with the way it was. And nobody has an answer
yeah.
for that.
Right.
I didn't have a lot of
one.
Wealth. No, because I grew up in the inner city. I grew up in the poorest section of Boston. Lived in a three-decker. But you know who lived there? My grandmother lived with us. And upstairs, my uncle lived with us. And my cousins lived downstairs. And the neighbors dropped in all the time. My father had a car that he had to roll down a hill to get started. All right? But Dad went to work. 8 hours later, he came walking up the stairs. And we sat down and we had dinner. And they helped us with our homework. And we talked and communicated. And we had Sunday dinners. You know, it was all about the family. And the house was always full, whether it was a neighbor or a relative or a friend. And we went outside and we played till it hurt. And we came in when it was dark. And... What you want to tell me what was wrong with all of that?
Well, I'm right there with you. That kind of sounds like my childhood, except we grew up on a farm, but it was the same deal.
Yeah.
It was all about the family. We ate meals together. And I don't care who eats meals together anymore as a family.
I don't.
And what they're missing is there's some magic happens when people sit down and eat together. There's magic.
It's called being human.
It's been long.
Yeah, it's
yes.
It's called not only being a man, being a better man. It's better being a better human. And so what? We swap that for flat screen TVs and smartphones and computers and the internet and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and Pokemon. So what did we gain? And now the gender issue is so messed up that these guys, of course they don't even know what to be. Being straight isn't going to get you on the front cover of Vanity Fair and get you a cosmetic deal or a lingerie deal. See, they're not going to get a couple of $1 million endorsement, but you're going to get recognized and applauded as a hero, and you're going to get a flag to go with it to identify your culture within this society as being a bit better above. I am all for everybody having their own preference. I am not for people becoming heroes because of their sexual. You are not a hero because of where you place your genitals. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. It's
something has flipped upside down. Yes, tolerance for everybody. I respect that. Absolutely. I don't want anybody telling me who or what I can date or be with. But don't make me a hero because of it.
Yeah.
We're a country. I mean, we got to be the laughingstock of the world. I mean, I travel extensively to other countries. It's not like this.
No, I was on a reality show in Norway, and so I know a lot of people there, and they do kind of think we're sort of a laughingstock here in America because of the things we do, and it just seems like the people running the train have just walked out, and it's just running down the tracks by itself.
Yeah, and everybody's got their hands up going, it wasn't me. No, it wasn't us. We didn't do it. We had nothing to do with it. And why don't you? And look, it is running down the track, so just shut up and let it go. Well, if it keeps going like this, I mean, here you have, I don't necessarily blame the millennials now. I've taken a little softer stand because, something, it isn't their fault. They don't even know how they got
this. No, I agree. It's not their fault. It's their parents'
it's
fault.
It's the generation that
maybe
brought
their
them up.
Parents' fault. Yeah, I
yep.
agree.
And their parents yeah. before yeah, my, them. This all, you're right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say my son is on the cusp of being a millennial. My daughter is, I think, still considered a millennial by her age, but they are in no way, shape, or form a stereotypical millennial because they weren't raised that way. I mean, it's pretty
exactly.
simple. I mean, you raise a child and instill them with certain values and principles and morals and a direction, and they don't turn out that way. But a lot of it's just pure laziness, in my opinion, laziness on the part of parents.
I live in a part of Boston that is now overrun with millennials. All right, they. The other day I was coming out, and I think as I told you in my bio, I've got one leg. And so all the way up to my hip. And I'm moving my bundles in. I have a procedure. I move them from my car to the first landing. I can reach up and load them on the first landing of the stairs. And then I go back to the car, and I keep doing that until I get them all settled there. And then I move up, and I can easily move them to the second landing and into my house. Now, before, we had neighbors that lasted 5, 10, 15, whatever. Now, monthly, people are moving in and out because everything's so expensive. It's like a college. This is like a big college campus. It's just college town. They're just moving in and out constantly. So what used to be people my age and that had a long-standing attachment, a connection to the neighborhood, it's gone. So you have now probably there's six units here. There's only two that are, you know, my age, and the other four, and they're full of roommates, et cetera. But the long story is, six of the millennials saw what I was doing and walked by my bundles, walked by me, walked by me and my bundles, as though I didn't or the bundles didn't exist, and they had their heads in, you know, headsets on, and they looked on their phones. But I didn't exist. And they will walk by you in the common area and never acknowledge you. Again, I'm going to go back to the idea of there's a mark on the film that shouldn't be there. This batch of film got messed up, buddy. You better go back and tell your factory if they want the business here, you better clean it up, you see. And something, folks, something's wrong with the batch.
It's true. Yeah, I was talking to a young man the other day. He's just 22, 23, but he's an exemplary young man. His father is a good friend of mine and raised him really well, and he's just a dynamic young man. And I told him, you are going to be the head and shoulders a leader of your generation, because, I mean, really all you have to do in your generation is show up on time and have some manners, and wow, you're already ahead of the pack. And
I love
this guy.
Woody Allen's take on that was 90% of luck. 90% of life is showing up.
Yeah,
and you're right. And
really
how you
true.
Show up. Yeah, and how you show up and what you show up as. You're right. It's an example, and it will stand out.
Yeah. And in my podcast, I'm one of my overriding themes is, look, you have to go lock yourself in the bathroom and look in the mirror at yourself as an individual and pick out something that's not working. Pick out something that's messed up, that you're not happy with, that needs improvement, and then focus on that thing. Focus on that and try to make it better. I mean, one thing at a time, incrementally become a better person. And what I'm finding is when people listen to three or four episodes, it kind of gets in their head subliminally, and they start doing it. They start wondering, wow, I wonder how I can be a little bit better today. I mean, it has to start somewhere. I'm not ready to just say there's no hope absolutely for this generation, because it takes voices like mine, yours, and whoever else's to just give them a spark, point them in the right direction and help them. I don't know.
Okay, so of those things that you're talking about, looking for those things, what would you say, where's the best place to begin? What's the virtue, you know, looking for the positive things? What is the virtue that you would say to them, or the character trait that you would say is the most basic, the most essential to start with, that today's men need?
I would say, and I always go back to personal accountability, actually being accountable for one's own actions and owning everything you do, good and bad. I have a saying, I am my deeds. I become the things that I do, good things and bad things alike. So, but there is no accountability in the world today. So if a man can look at himself and be responsible for everything he does, especially when nobody else is watching him, just when he's alone, if he sees some litter on the street, and he picks it up because it's the right thing to do.
Yes, I love it, because they all walk by it now.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do. And I also try to get guys to take, as a man, take charge of the area around them, the area they can see in all directions. That's your area. You're the man in that area. If a woman's being harassed in that area, go take care of it. If there's some garbage on the street, pick it up. You're the man in that area. Police it. be the man wherever you go.
I love it. I love that accountability. I'm going to go what I think is even more basic, courage. Have the courage to be accountable. Have the courage to speak up. Have the courage to stand up to the people who are taking away your, or attempting to take away your power. Regain, have the courage to reclaim your power. Don't be afraid, because the conventional wisdom is all the other way. You know, stand up. Stand up to the person you're in the room. Like you say, not only clean up the physical space, clean up the relationship space around you. You don't have to be a punching bag for anybody.
No.
Be a man.
And,
you have rights. You have integrity.
Right.
And I don't see that anyway. They're all afraid. They're afraid.
See, question. How many fights did you get in as a kid?
I was a white kid growing up in a black neighborhood. I was outnumbered.
Yes, you got a few fights, didn't you?
50-1.
Right. And
when I couldn't run fast enough, then I had a fight.
Yeah, I got in a lot of fights too, and I'm meeting guys today. And look, I'm not advocating violence, but I meet guys today, 27, who've never been in a fight in their whole life. I'm like, how is that even possible? It's because...
Well, I'll tell you what. You see, here we go. This is a great... I've just stumbled on this one, too. You see what we've got here, and see what this generation has done? See, there's nobody taking care of the kids. You see, the kids are farmed out. You drop a kid, you have them less than 3 months, because people aren't even taking the 3 months maternity leave. They're dropping them in a daycare. Or a nanny or something else. So they've been dropped off. So there's no. So now this. Then, as they mature and they advance, there's no what we had. You see, there's no independent play. You know, there's no out there doing your thing as kids.
Right.
You see, because when we were kids, we were allowed to play with other kids. You see. But because everybody's so safety conscious, and because there's no, everything's farmed out. I mean, you're farming out parenting. You're subcontracting your parenting. So you subcontract your parenting. So everything is programmed. Everything is set. The kid is not allowed to be alone or independent or play by themselves. Everything's got to be supervised. So they supervise the soccer, they supervise the baseball, they supervise. And when they get to a playing field, there's no other kids. The kids are there, but they're all subject to parental guidance. So the when we went out to play, first of all, you decided what game you would play that day, whether you would play baseball or basketball or football, or you just would play hide and seek, or you would go fishing, or you would do whatever it was, or just be kids and goof around.
Yeah, or like me, I'd spend all day out in the woods just pretending I was a pirate or an Indian or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, using your imagination. But the thing is, you made those decisions, self-made decisions. And here's the better thing, you see, when you played with the other kids, and I use this example, when you went to pick a team, you see, if you're going to play baseball, there was an innate sense of fairness with the kids. Nobody ever made the teams lopsided, right?
Right, because
they
distributed the kids out of the game.
That's right. They knew it would take the fun away. But who made that decision? Kids did. They knew inherently. That's what we're born with, a sense of fair play. So you picked the best hitter got picked. So you picked the next best hitter for the next team. The fastest guy got picked, so you picked the next fastest to him. The kid who couldn't do crap got put out in right field, and you picked another one.
Right.
But you knew what to do. But who made the decisions? So we grew up with the ability to make decisions on our own, and we're accountable for what we decided that day. If you got into trouble, you had to pay for it. If you did something good, you got the reward. But these kids don't make seeds, though. They don't get into a fight because they weren't put in any place where they could have a fight.
Yeah.
They've been programmed and supervised. So they show up, they grow up as adults, and we don't know what to do because they never made a decision. How can you have leaders when they were never allowed to lead? So they've fallen into...
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, didn't mean to interrupt you, but one of my big things is nobody knows themselves anymore. And because of exactly what you're talking about, you have all these things handed to you, predestined for you. You don't have challenges or obstacles to overcome. So how do you know who you even are? And guys are growing up not knowing who they are. And then something bad happens, and they don't even know how to react, and they react in a way that they don't even expect.
Well, you know what they're calling these kids? I'm sorry for interrupting you. They're calling this generation the snowflake generation, you see. And it's not only here, but I first picked it up in England and then had to look up what it meant. But you see, the other thing is, they played a game, so they all won. Everybody was a winner. Nobody was a loser. Because, God, you can't make adversity. You can't enter adversity anymore. We got to protect everybody from adversity. We don't want anybody experiencing any pain, God forbid, and learning how to deal with it and overcome it. So we make everybody. So they've been told with accolades how great they were. They're wonderful, baby, wonderful. So now when they get into the workforce or whatever, they get out in the thing and they've done something wrong and they get corrected, they cry.
Yeah.
They cry because their feelings are hurt.
How less prepared could you be for adulthood than that?
But nothing's wrong. What are you upset about? This is much better than it was. Why don't you just be quiet?
Well, I heard this is the first generation right now that's got a shorter life expectancy than their parents.
Wow.
That's scary. The first time in history a generation is expected to live a less time
than their parents. These are the statistics nobody wants to hear. And the other one I heard the other day is that 20%, 1 in 5 students in school today have mental health issues. 1 in 5.
Yeah.
Where's that
problem with that one? I don't know. I mean, I guarantee you, if you listen to some of my stories that I tell on Wednesdays, they're stories from my childhood and stuff. I was a crazy kid, and if I was a kid now, I would for sure be diagnosed with all kinds of crap, and I'd be on lithium and who knows what else.
Exactly. Drug them.
But I was just a kid with a good imagination who tested my boundaries every day because that's what kids do.
Right.
I mean, I woke up every day and my poor mother.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But the reason you got into trouble is because you were socially active. You were socially aware. You spoke your opinions. You know, you tested them out. You know.
Yeah,
you
I tested my boundaries. Every day I'd make sure, okay, is this still okay or not? Okay, I guess it's not.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's just kind of a normal part of being a human being. Like, I always go back to how our species originated and evolved, and we're still packing all that around with us, but it just...
Well, you know...
We live in a world where
it doesn't
apply.
I'm going to jump in because, you see, I've learned a few things recently, that we're not allowed to talk about and we're not allowed to acknowledge in our manhood, you see, because masculinity and manhood is not a good thing in this society. It's an evil thing. And but, you see, there's a new fad, especially among older women, and it's I see it not only in my own personal life, but I've put an end to it in my own personal life. There's this thing about women wanting to have male friends and only friends. They don't want the sexual side of a man or a romantic side of a man. They want to be friends. And a lot of guys are falling for this, and I see it everywhere. And I became, you know, I really had an affection for this one gal, and so I kind of fell into the same trap. Well, maybe that'll change, you know, once, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized anytime I made any kind of sexual advance or romantic advance, I was met with horror and disgust. How could you look at me like that? How could you see? Because this is what men are confronted with now. You're supposed to honor me as a person, not as a woman. And it hit me. Why was I getting so upset about this? Well, you see, what these individuals do is they want to speak to that man regularly, probably daily. They don't want to be in a relationship with him, a bona fide relationship, but they want this ersatz relationship. So what they will do is they'll talk to him an hour or two a day and tell him all about their problems with their kids, problem with their sister, problem with their friends, problems at work, financial problems. So they want emotional support from the man. And they want to be, and if something, you know, something goes wrong, you know, go over the house and fix it. Or then it's somebody's annoying them, then a little phone call, so a protective. So you see what they're doing. And then even once in a while, some financial support if they need a little help to get them by. This is okay for them to ask, you see. And then I'm just wondering, why was I getting so upset about this? You see, because what they're doing and what men aren't being told, you're born with a set of instincts. They're hardwired into you. Even though certain segment of the society wanted to say they didn't exist, that everybody was the same, whether it's male or female. No, they're not. We can't have babies. We're not nurturers. But we are protectors. Okay? We are providers.
Yes.
Okay, those are instincts. And when you push those instincts, you automatically trigger the romantic instinct. You want to have the complete relationship. But they want to truncate it, you see. And they don't want to tell you that you're evil or wrong or a pig for wanting it all the way. Because so this is what men are confronted with. And men got to understand, they got the courage to stand up and say, hey, I don't want to be violated. I have instincts. Don't push my buttons. If you don't want me, leave me alone. I'm not going
right.
to go halfway or quarter, three quarters of the way. You know, my daughter was the one who turned to me. She says, Dad, I tell all my girlfriends, any guy that comes to them and wants to be a friend and doesn't want to put a ring on their finger or make a committed relationship, dump them. You don't have time for them. And the women feel at least been empowered that they can do that. It's time for men to say, no. I don't have to sacrifice. I don't have to settle. You see?
Yeah. I
have to honor my instincts, and I want you to honor my instincts. They're good instincts. You're right. These are the instincts that got us this far.
Right. Yeah, and now we're living in a world where they don't apply, and life has become so freaking easy. How often is a man confronted with death? Not very often.
Right.
And where 1,000 years ago, every day when our ancestors walked out of their door, they might die that day. So,
yep.
I mean, their survival was on the line every day, and that makes you know yourself. Back to knowing yourself. You know who you are.
Well, you know, you get hit, you get adversity, you have to learn, am I going to die, or am I going to fight back, or am I going to escape, or am I going to do, how am I going to avoid this situation? Again, you start
yeah.
to make decisions, but not if you're bust off for a play date.
Right, right. Yeah, and I have had some female friends, but pretty much every one of them were women that I was not attracted to at all.
Well, that's the only way you can do it. You'd have to, and you know, and doesn't that kind of sad that you're really looking at them the way they're looking at you? Is that I really don't find you attractive, so you can be my friend?
Yeah, or it's different now. You know, now I'm married to somebody that I love, so now I can be friends with more women without that coming up for me.
Well,
but,
exactly, because you have somebody
yeah.
in your life who's honoring you for what you really are.
Right. Yeah. People get really confused over that friend scenario, and you're right. Guys are just expected to act in ways that are just simply contrary to their nature.
Exactly, and again, there's an avalanche of conventional wisdom and media and everything else. And this is, I think, what's so powerful about what you're saying, and I hope that I can say to guys, first of all, you're right, be accountable, but have the courage to be what you are. Don't accept what society's telling you. You know, you don't have to go looking for a rainbow flag that's going to make you, you know, be recognized by society. It's okay if you have a rainbow flag, but don't think that, you know, and that's what I tell these women that once. I say, well, you know, what you really need is a gay boyfriend. You know, leave me alone. I'm a man. I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize for being a man. You know, so these kids are confused. Why wouldn't they be confused? You know, now you're starting to hear that there's more experimenting with homosexuality. Why? There's a thought system. That was never a question when I was growing up. I just followed my instincts.
Yeah.
You didn't have to question about what was masculine or not masculine. It was clear.
It's all very nebulous now. People, especially
it's
kids.
There's more things. And again, I'm looking at them, and they're lost. I see the millennials here. They work an inordinate amount of hours. When they come out, they jump into men's underwear, these gals, and they run around the neighborhood by themselves or with other women. Hmm. And they seem content with that. And they stand off. They're impossible to approach or acknowledge. They don't acknowledge anybody. Nobody else exists. And, you know, the men are just as bad. So you have these people. You know, I had a Russian friend come over here once, and he went to the beach. He says, Tom, never in my life I see blanket all women, blanket all men. Nobody talk to each other. I go, so welcome to Boston, Massachusetts. You know, and so they, you're right. They didn't have the fathers. You know, my father, you know, God bless him. He's 93. He's still alive. He's my best friend, and I talk to him every day. And he just, he is appalled at what has happened.
Yeah, it's really something.
So I think we have to get down to, you know, instead of, we know the problem. We know it's the media. We know it's the thought pattern. We know it's the conventional wisdom. We know it's the consciousness. So what do we say to guys? We say, first of all, man up. Be a man. Have the courage. Have the conviction. You're not wrong for being a man. As much as the society wants to tell you you're out of date, you don't exist anymore, there's no need for you, all right? You do have a place. It's your instinct to be that. And you deserve the best in a partner. You don't have to settle. One of the things that I talked to a feminist last week, Jane Kenyon out of United Kingdom, and she's brilliant. And I thought we were going to get into some pretty heady stuff, but it turns out it was like this phone call. We agreed on everything. And she said, Tom, she says, I'm a feminist, but I love men. I have a husband I love. I value relationships. I need a man in my life. So she said, you know, let's take a scenario, Tom. He said, a couple is sitting in their den watching television or whatever, and all of a sudden a dragon's at the door. Now, there's many ways that can be handled. Either the woman can take care of it, or the man can take care of it, or they agree that one or the other will take care of it. She says, now, if the woman, as soon as the dragon shows up, if the woman jumps in, like women have been taught today to take control of everything. Now, this is coming from a woman, and a feminist. She says, if she jumps in and takes care of the dragon, what she's just done is emasculated her husband.
Completely. Completely.
His instinct is to take care of that dragon.
Yeah.
She says, but conventional wisdom is the woman takes the action. And in many cases, I see it all the time. The man, you know, I love going to the resorts and watching women with their shopping bags, with their husband in tow, walking 10 feet behind. Well, the women, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. The women aren't carrying the shopping bags. The men are. And they're following their wives from store to store. Now, hey, if that's what you like as a couple, that's fine. Well, maybe you might at least walk with the guy or vice versa.
Yeah, because they're Sherpas.
Yeah, so they're Sherpas. Sherpas to the shopper. And You know, and so where is your manhood?
Yeah.
You know, and you see this over and over again. So it's been taken. So this is where we have to address guys and go, look, you're a man. It's okay to be a man. It's okay to have every single instinct of being a man. Nothing wrong with it. Honor it. Just as a woman is taught to be a woman. But see, even that's nebulous, isn't it? Because the real feminine aspects were denigrated and degraded. Couldn't be a nurturer. You couldn't be a somebody who was a healer. Though you don't talk about that stuff. That aspect of femininity, that's gone.
I'm sorry, just be tough.
You know, so I think you're right. I think we have to shift this. Yeah, we have to shift this to say, hey guys, focus on those aspects that make you a man. Be proud of them, honor them, act on them. Because, and I'm going to go back to how I started this. You know who needs that? The next generation of kids. It's good for the boys and the girls for you to be a man and show that you're a man. It's good for society to see the reemergence of males.
Well, that brings up another point, if I may. There's this common thought in society that women like bad boys. And
it's true.
I disagree with it. Well, they do, but what they really like is those few masculine traits that bad boys exhibit.
Exactly.
What woman in her right mind would really want a bad guy? No, none of them do. They want a good man, but who's a masculine man. But unfortunately, a lot of the bad guys are portraying masculine traits that women can't but help be attracted to. And that's what they're keying in on, not the fact that he's a criminal or that he's a bad person.
Right.
He's an aggressor, he's
displaying in, well, one gal explained it to me, a great friend of mine, and she said, well, what we love is the chaos, you see. And she says, part of what we love is the chaos, and the chaos keeps us from our own chaos, because there's a lot of chaos going inside of us. And as long as we've got his chaos to try to fix, we don't have to look at ourselves. She said, I was married to a guy who beat her physically. And she said, so bad that, she finally got herself removed from the house. She was beaten so bad. And she decided, started dating a nice guy, and she was bored stiff. And then she looked herself in the mirror every day and said, look, you're going to get used to this. You're going to get used to being treated like a woman and treated with respect. And you're not going to be, worried about the next time he gets arrested or drunk or anything else. She says, that's gone from your life. You see, I saw a book that a lot of time bothered me. Somebody had left here. It was Why Men Love Bitches. And I looked at it. It used to infuriate me because you're right. There's certain things about a bitchy woman might be sexy, but down deep, I don't want to live with a bitch. And so one day I looked at the title and I said, why do men love bitches? And I had the answer. Same reason women love bastards. They want it. They choose it. And so you're right. So it's it's time for men to balance it, to do those manly things, to be the aggressor, not to be the one that's ashamed of being a man or portraying masculine, even though those aren't honored in this society. You're going to have to buck society. You're going to have to get yelled at and pointed at and accused of being not cool or not with the current, what they want you to be. So that's the first step. If you want them to be accountable, they got to have the courage to be a man in the first place.
It's possible to be a full-blown man and not be a douchebag.
Exactly.
That is a possible thing. That's what my father was.
Right.
Yeah,
and
mine
too. That
sounds
like who your father was.
Yep. And I have to think that's who I am too. I mean, I'm a full-blown man, but
man, I'm nice to people. I'm not an asshole.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, really, one of the best parts about being a man is having the capacity and ability to share your strength with others, and to help out people who need help, and be able to be a helpful, protective force in the world. And, you know, you don't have to be a douchebag.
Well, again, what are we leaving as a legacy? God will help us. Look at the legacy that the last generation left. Or is leaving. I don't want, you know, my two daughters, I had two daughters. Thank God they're not what the conventional wisdom is. You know, these gals are women. They're independent women. They're strong women, but most of all, they're happy women. And they have hearts. They haven't abandoned the heart. And they're self-actualized, yet, you see, I laugh at the independence thing that was sold to women. Independence. And somebody recently asked some people, what about interdependence? You know something? They don't even know what the word means. They don't understand that it's okay to be independent, and I'm all for independence. But once you've achieved that, what's wrong with being interdependent with someone? Taking your independence and sharing it with a strong, independent person, in creating interdependence, where you need each other, where you help each other. They don't even know the word. Oh, there's a gal in here. You know, I had a roommate. Her friend was a graduate of a major university in psychology. She didn't listen to me. What's it mean? I says, oh, they put you through 4 years, but they certainly taught you how to be independent, didn't they?
Right.
You know, I had one on my podcast. I had a great gal who was a psychologist, and all for children's rights. And she said, you know, this idea of independence is not only laid not only on the women, the gals, the girls, but it's laid on the boys. She said, if an Indian or an African mother ever looked at the way Americans put a child to bed, they'd be appalled, because they put an infant in the crib, and if the infant acts up, they walk to the door, they shut the door and let the baby cry itself to sleep, because the baby has to learn how to be independent. Not nurtured, not loved, not cared for. So we begin it at an early age, and we think that there's some virtue in this independence. Being hard, being tough, being cold, being distant. And see, these are the things that nobody wants to talk about, and they tell you to, why can't you just accept it?
Yeah.
So I think what you and I can do is, when I'm trying to make the shift without venting my anger at what is guys, grow up, become men, understand it's good to be strong, it's good to have your own independent will, it's good not to fall for what everybody else is feeding you. Create your own world and be a man, everything that is a man. Be courageous, be a provider, be a father, have some etiquette, have some manners, have some class, you know, have some taste, you know, be chivalrous. It's not wrong to be chivalrous. They tell you not to open the door, say, too bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I do.
I would add to that there's a lot of young guys who really, they don't know how to do that. They haven't had an example.
No, it's gone because nobody taught them. Right.
Yeah, so if you're a guy like that listening, find a guy that exhibits these qualities, a guy like Tom, a guy like me, there's other guys out there. Find a guy, make him a mentor. I mean, that's how our species evolve. We learn from our elders, and we learn from those who went before. So find a guy that you respect and admire, and be like him. I mean, use him as a guide.
Right. You know, well, I hope this is just the first of many of these that we can have. And
yeah.
I think I commend you for doing what you're doing and finding, you've branded yourself extremely well. You know, for a woman to call me up and say, hey, you should listen to this guy, he's really good. And they love your stories, and they love your lessons. And, you know, I think we can, you know, I need to temper my anger, because I'm so invested in it. I saw it coming. I saw it 50 years ago. I was a student at the University of Connecticut, and I was watching it happen. I said, oh, this is not going to turn out right. This fleeing
not gonna
from the
end
family,
well.
this denigration of the basic structure of humanity, you know, lessening its value, lessening the family, lessening the kids, you know, and replacing it with a career, you know, which really wasn't a career, but to see that just abandon, just total abandonment, buying the whole thing, and oh, we're off to work. That's fine if that's what you want to do. I don't want to take away anybody when they, or even if they choose not to have children, that's fine. Live your own life. But don't tell me that it's more valuable than what was, or that this has to be balanced. What about how it happened to balance? You know, I mean, Aristotle knew that the virtue was the mean between two extremes. You know, I mean, all of this stuff the masters knew. We've thrown us away. Pick up the Tao, read the Tao Te Ching, and you'd realize Lao Tzu knew the first part is the soft overcomes the hard. You know, water will wear down rock. Hardness, toughness, meanness is not a virtue.
No.
You know, and so here we are, and, you know, let's keep it going and say to guys, it's time to wake up.
Time
you know,
to
because
wake up. And
guess what? It's not working. Whatever it's doing ain't working.
No. And I mean, flash forward 20 years from now, what's the world going to be like? We got to start thinking about that. And
maybe not
scary.
The world. Maybe there's still hope for other countries because they still value families and women are feminine and women are beautiful and women are sexy and men are men. And so it'll probably just be the implosion, you know, of America. I mean, it'll just, you know, unless they get a grasp on this, it's not pretty because you have a bunch of kids. Yeah, how are they going to bring up kids? They don't know. They weren't us.
Right.
They didn't make decisions.
That's the problem. You got people raising kids who don't have a clue, who weren't raised themselves, who weren't given the lessons they need. And
I drove for Uber for a while, and I would ask these young kids. I said, "Do you ever have family dinner?" They go, "What's that?" No, we never sat down to dinner. How do you do that?
Well, that's why voices like yours and mine and others are important. Because for some people, it's the first time they've heard these concepts, the first time. And because they're true, they resonate with people when they hear them. And so the more we can talk, the more we can, I mean, it may not change the world, but it won't hurt.
It's a start. You know, again, let's go back to why we started this Starbucks. You can either stand by or you can stand up. And I'm going to add my own little twist on that. If you stand up, you just might stand out.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's time for people to stand out.
Yeah.
You know, and not just, and I love this one. You know, I've been around spiritual people for, it's just the fact that I survived a terminal disease. You know, if 100 kids got it, 95 died. And so I naturally gravitated toward trying to figure out why. And it all came from, you know, exploring the spiritual side. And, you know, but there's a lot of what I call pseudo-spiritual people out there. And I go, oh, well, don't judge. Don't, you know, we shouldn't judge and we should respect others and we should learn to accept the way it is. And I say, really? Really? Well, how about we do this? How about, yes, I agree, we shouldn't judge. How about we simply describe the actions, the behavior, the attitudes, the results? Is it okay to describe? Oh, well, I guess it's okay to describe. Well, guess what? The description isn't very good, is it? six people walking by, some one-legged guy, 69 years old, and walk right by his bundles and him.
I got no problem with judging personally.
I think we have to get back to it. Right.
I will judge somebody based on
what my own moral compass. Yeah, exactly.
I will judge somebody, and I don't see.
And call them out on it.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
You, sir, are wrong right now, and not you. I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand.
I got no problem judging
somebody. Again, that goes back to your accountability. If you can be self-accountable, you can tell other people to be accountable.
Yep, and then they have an opportunity to tell me why I'm wrong. I mean, there can be a discourse if need be, but
right.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, Tom,
listen, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if my listeners wanted to follow you, contact you, whatever, what's the best way for them to do that?
This podcast, which I'll put up here, I'm Upbeat with Tom Hayes, and all I have to do is do that. And for my listeners, the best way to get you is being a better man, right? I mean,
yeah,
that came right up on Google.
Yeah, and Being a Better Man podcast is my website. So beingabettermanpodcast.com. So yeah.
Great. Well, let's get together.
Yeah,
in fact, I like this. And it's almost too easy because we agree.
Right.
But we invite others to disagree, don't we?
Absolutely. And I like the fact that we are about a generation apart. But yet, we're still, so we have a slightly different experience, but we're still in there. We're still in the same pot.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, and it took a while, a little self-enlightenment for me. I'm not just trying to destroy a movement. I mean, I am in a way. I think it has to be reevaluated and everything else. I'm talking about let's start talking about children. Let's start talking about families. Let's give these kids a break. Let's introduce some love. Let's introduce a sense of play. Let's introduce some humor. Let's try to create a happy society again, not a society full of hate.
That's all about money.
Men hate. It's all about money. That's right. And don't have everything else. And that's what the flight was. Oh, we can make money. Let's go make money. Yeah, now look. What are you going to do with the money?
Right.
Right. And then the more money you make, the more money you spend. Because, to make the money, you're not happy where you're making the money. You're miserable where you're making the money. So the only way you can appease that pain and that empty part of you, because you're not getting fulfilled in the career, which turns out to be the cubicle, you run out on the weekends and you run to the mall and you spend on stuff that'll try to make the pain go away. Or you get more medication and more drugs or more alcohol to take away the pain. But you don't want to find out what's giving you the pain in the first place.
Well, and when they talk to old men that are about to die on their deathbed, one of the biggest regrets that comes up is that they didn't pay enough time and energy to their relationships in life.
Yeah.
I mean, don't die with that regret. I mean, really, life is about family and relationships, and that's where everything is. Yes.
Exactly. And it's been relationships have been denigrated by a movement because they didn't like the other half of the relationship. And so work becomes more tantamount. Money becomes tantamount. Independence becomes tantamount. Love doesn't become important anymore. It's not valued. And You know, that starts at the beginning. Why do you have a kid if you don't want to love it and nurture it and hug it and hold it and teach it and want the best for its happiness? I don't get it. I don't get it. And to laugh with it, to play with it, and to learn with it. To spend as much time as you can with it.
I had kids really young. I was 19 when, well, my son was born on my 20th birthday, basically. And I was in the Army. I was out in the field 9 months out of the year. And I realized really quickly, well, this is stupid. Why did I have kids if I only see them 3 months out of the year? So I got out of the Army. And, I mean, and now my kids are a real joy to me.
Of course. Of course. It's our legacy. It's what we've left. And if you've left some great kids who can leave some more great kids, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, I have 9 grandchildren now.
God bless you. That's a legacy. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you, I decided to get... go ahead.
No, go ahead.
When I decided to get remarried when I was 57, I started to find out how sick this society had become. All that people kept telling me is, are you crazy? You don't see it? She just wants your money. Oh, you stupid. You have the perfect life. You're alone. You've got money. You've got freedom. You've got possessions. You've got houses. You've got time. You've got your health. Don't blow it. Don't fall in love. You can't. You're a fool. You know, you're going to fall out of love, and you're going to wake up, and you don't want to be there. And I'm like, it was unbelievable, the resistance. Don't do it. Especially because she's got 2 kids. What do you want those kids in your life for?
Yeah.
That was the best part of it. And now I got 2 fantastic stepkids.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
good for you for having the courage to do that.
Did I take the heat? Right, did I take the heat?
Are they all eating crow now?
No, they want to, you know, we're not together, but I'm so deeply in love and love this woman. We left just because it was time to go. We had a beautiful ride, and it was time for her to move on. She was really much younger than me, and I said, you know, she wanted other things. And she said to me, you'll let me go? I said, of course. And she looked at me and said, you really love me? I said, of course. She said, you know, love isn't just bound by a marriage, you know, or holding on to somebody who's ready to go, you know. And so as a result, I ended up with, you know, she was here the other night for dinner and told 2 of my friends who happened to walk in at the same time. Because I had taken her from Russia. I had met her on a trip to Russia. I didn't go there with any intention of meeting anyone. And it just happened.
Right.
And she said to them, I've been in this country over 10 years. I have yet to meet a man who did what my husband did for me. She says, they told me my life was over in Russia. I was 28 years old with 2 kids, and they told me I would never remarry because there wasn't a man in Russia who would have remarried me. She says, and when I get here, I realize it's the same way here. No man wants a woman with 2 kids. And she said, he took me out of my country and gave me a new life for me and my children. She says, I will be connected to this man till the day I die. I love this man. And that's what I got. You know, and... And that doesn't quantify in terms of dollars and cents, does it?
No. Priceless.
Of course it is. You know, it's the part that gives me the greatest joy. And to see her excel and be happy. And I saved her from a very, very despondent lifestyle. I mean, it's just, you know, one thing I saw the lifestyle there. There's in some ways the rich have it very well there, but if you're not rich, you're in trouble.
Right.
So, you know, I gave her and her children, you know, a whole new lifestyle and a whole new, you know, opportunities that they never would have had. And they're happy. You know, which is the... See, these are the things that don't get into named into it. Happiness, who talks about that? Who values that? You're not supposed to, you know, oh, well, just, you know, money is valued, but happiness, love, compassion, giving, sharing, you know, celebrating, you know, those things don't hold what they used to.
No.
So, no. Well, Alf, let's make this the inauguration podcast, and let's recircle.
Okay.
And I'll send you the link to this,
sure.
But it's Upbeat with Tom Hayes. And if they just Google Thomas Hayes, I'm pretty sure to come up, because I've got a lot of things that would bring them there. You know, I'm a comedian. I'm also running I've just published a couple of books and kids books. And
I had a really big. I had a really big introduction all planned for you, but since we had to do it on your podcast, I'll save it for another one.
All right. Well,
beautiful.
I'll send you the link to this, and you can download it, and then you can then use your software to edit it.
Okay. Yeah,
and
sounds
then,
good.
And share it. Excellent.
Well,
and I'll try to make up a poster for this one.
Okay. And
let's keep in touch.
Okay, let's do that for sure. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Super.
All right, Tom. Have a great day.
You too. Have a beautiful weekend. Thanks.
Okay.
And that's it,
bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Boston, Massachusetts. That was Alf Hergstad, and he can be found at Being a Better Man podcast. And he's a great guy. Thanks, Alf Hergstad. I'm sorry. Alf Hergstad. Thanks, Alf.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.